The Father, by August Strindberg, in a new version by Laurie Slade, was originally performed by the Belgrade Theatre Coventry. Joe Dixon played the captain and Katie Stevens played Laura. Holly Earle was Berta and Barbara Young was Margaret. The pastor was played by Lawrence Kennedy. The doctor by Patrick Toomey. Annoyed by Staten Cousins Rowe. Original music was composed by Matthew Bugg. And the casting director was Kate Plantin. The play was directed by Joe Harmston and was a unique production for BBC Radio 3.
And don't forget that you can catch up with all editions of Drama on 3 for up to 7 days after their broadcast on the Radio 3 website. Next week's play is George Bernard Shaw's You Never Can Tell, and that's at the later time of 10 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3.
Some of the greatest music to have graced the big screen. The sound of cinema season on BBC Radio 3. For more about the season and other BBC stations taking part, and to explore a growing archive of exclusive interviews with some of film music's greatest names, go to bbc.co.uk/soundofcinema.
And if you go to the BBC iPlayer, you can see last week's concert, Europe on Film, featuring music from composers as diverse as Morricone, Preisner and Ligeti. This is Radio 3. It's just after 10 o'clock. Time now for World Roots with Lucy Duran.
This is really the most incredible sight. We're on the mountainside above Damascus, and there is the city stretching out beneath us. It's evening, it's dusk time, and as you can hear, the call to prayer is going on just all over the city. You can hear all the different calls to prayer intermingling. Damascus. What a fabulously beautiful city.
It's just phenomenal. Yeah, I can't tell you how beautiful it is. It's really impossible to describe. Pure assault on the senses. Just standing in silence, feeling the wind caress your ear and just hearing the city rumbling underneath the calls to prayer. It feels like you can hear the entire city alive. Like every now and then you hear a voice of a small child running around somewhere
from way down there.
Have no idea where it's coming from, and then you hear a car playing some music, and it's just amazing. You're seeing lights come up in front of your eyes, and you're hearing sounds just pop out of nowhere, and you just can't really place anything. It's absolutely phenomenal. You can see why people have been living here for so long. It's just stunning.
Damascus, Syria, 2010. A very different place from Damascus today. World Roots was there with young Iraqi oud player Khayyam Alami, who was the first of our World Roots Academy protégés, taking us on a musical journey back to the country where he was born. Hearing our reports from Damascus reminds me how lucky I've been to present World Roots over 13 years and record some amazing music on location in some of the most remote and musical places on Earth. The World Roots team were especially lucky to be in Damascus at a time when it was still possible to go there and witness its vibrant musical scene at first hand. World Roots was first broadcast on the 21st of September 2000, exactly 13 years and one day ago. And in that time, we visited nearly 70 countries. This is our last programme, and I thought it would be nice to remember some of the many special moments of our extraordinary travels in search of music otherwise impossible to hear and never easy to reach. The things one does for world routes. I'm about to go across a channel between Fogo and Brava, which is the westernmost island of Cape Verde. And apparently this channel is really hard going. In fact, there's absolutely no guarantee that we're even going to get back, because if the weather comes up, that's just it. We're going to be staying on Brava. So we're on a trawler. There were two ferries, but they both went down, which isn't very encouraging. So now there's this one trawler that goes across. So I'm on this trawler with, about 50 people. You can hear that we're just setting off from the port. So we're about to head out into the choppy, choppy waters of the Atlantic. And we're going to Brava because that's where the most famous composer of morna, of the typical, the classical sound of the Cape Verde Islands, comes from, or came from. He died in the mid-19th century. So off we go to Brava. This is another adventure in search of traditional music of Cape Verde.
Morna é o género que mais se identifica com o Cabo Verde.
Morna is the genre that most closely identifies itself with Cape Verde. A famous Cape Verdean poet called Jorge Barbosa wrote about the despair of wanting to stay but having to leave. And this tragedy is what Morna represents. Our love and our despair having to abandon the islands because of droughts and the lack of work and the need to run after a better life.
Orozco and Barquisimeto are rapidly fading into the distance as I'm flying in a five-seater plane, a tiny plane that belongs to one of Venezuela's leading heart surgeons, Dr. Tomás Sanabria, and he is flying us down to the Llanos, to the plains, to San Fernando de Apure, which is third largest state in Venezuela and the flattest. From the plane, what I see are just huge expanses of flat savanna, lots of cattle down there. It's so dry, everything is yellow. We're right at the end of the dry season. Soon this entire plain will be flooded from the Apure River. And all you can see now are just little ponds, that's all that's left. Everything else has dried up. We're flying so low over these plains that I can see
everything in perfect detail. I can see the cows who are looking up at us with a rather puzzled look. I can see flocks of herons. And right now, we're looking for a landing strip. But the landing strip is so full of cattle and buffalo and horses that we're going to have to circle around two or three times to scare them away so that we can land down here on the plains in search of música llanera, the gorgeous harp music of central Venezuela, the music that's brought me here to this country. So we're circling again. Tomás says that sometimes we have to go around three or four times to make sure that all the animals go away. So here we go. Of Scotland, but the mountains that we're flying over, the Caucasus Mountains, are in fact the highest range in Europe, the highest mountain range, even higher than the Alps. And this means that many parts of the country are very remote and very difficult to get to. And that's why we're in this helicopter. It's a military helicopter they have kindly offered us, because we're on our way to a place that's especially isolated, Svaneti.
Exactly, Svaneti. As you were saying, Georgia is a very small country, but it has enormous diversity in it, from the sort of Mediterranean climate in the east to the Alpine areas we're going to now, and down later on in our trip, we'll be heading down to Batumi, in the subtropical part of the country. Svaneti is extraordinary because of the high mountains, over 5,000 meters, many of them. It's also famous for having the villages at the highest point in Europe, something like 10,000 feet. It's such a remote part of Georgia, in fact, that whenever there were invasions into the country, the Georgians used to go up to Svaneti to take refuge, and often they would take the frescoes from the churches, as a consequence of which many of the best frescoes, many of the treasures that have been best preserved in Georgia are up in Svaneti, or maybe moved now to museums out in Tbilisi, but were kept there for hundreds of years. But still, for Georgians, it has a reputation, an almost sort of mythical reputation, both because of the scenery and because of the people, who are quite extraordinary as well.
They also have preserved many ancient customs, including its music, I gather.
That's right. The music is polyphonic and differs greatly from the sort of music we heard when we were in Kakheti. It's much less melodic than that, much harsher, much sterner sound. And it reflects really the type of people that live there. They're very tough, resilient people who have to live in a very harsh environment, and the music reflects that. It's a spectacular landscape, and the people are quite spectacular in their own strange way as well.
Walileo,
You're listening to a World Roots special, looking back over the past 13 years of programmes recorded on location. There we heard the Rihor Ensemble from the top of the Caucasus in Georgia. In the middle was the entrancing Joropo music of the central plains of Venezuela. And first in that sequence was me on a boat to the wild island of Brava in Cape Verde and the Irmãos Unidos, who were singing their song Hora de Bay, Time to Go. Anyway, if I'd sailed in the opposite direction from Brava, due east towards continental Africa, I'd have found myself here.
This is the most magical sight. We're only about a kilometre outside Bissau, the capital of Guinea-Bissau, but because there's no electricity in the country, and there hasn't been for the past 2 years since the civil war here, we're plunged into darkness. There's a half-crescent moon, stars are out, and we're near a rice field, and we've been brought to this clearing in the bush, the huge mango trees, and underneath these mango trees, all the young Balanta people have gathered together to play their music and to welcome us. It certainly is quite a party. The young men are dancing around in a circle, and there's a band of two long-necked homemade lutes called simbi. There are drums, there are animal horns, there are rattles, and there are whistles. It's hard to describe the amazing appearance of these Balanta men. They're wearing everything from padlock chains around their necks to seashells strapped onto their arms and tortoise shells that are filled with seeds and they dangle over their private parts, and they're furiously rattling them at anybody who cares to look. Some are wearing berets, others are wearing army helmets, and their faces are covered in white chalk. They really look quite fearsome in the dark. Maybe this is a reminder of the recent wars here, but I think I'm probably much more at risk from these horrible giant mosquitoes that are swarming around me under these mango trees. It's been a great privilege to be the anchor of World Roots, but it wouldn't have been possible without the help of a formidable team of sound recordists, producers, and other presenters as well. One of the presenters we've heard regularly from places like Turkey, Jordan, and Israel is broadcaster Moshe Morad. One memorable moment was when he met the well-known Iraqi singer Ilham Al-Matfai, who's been living in exile in Jordan for many years.
Thank you so much, Ilham Al-Matfai, for inviting us here to Amman to hear you.
This is your place.
So in your shows around the world were many Iraqi refugees and people that left Iraq and settled in other countries come and see. There's one song that makes everyone shed a tear, and it's Baghdad. I think I've never heard such a beautiful love song to a city.
Thank you. It's my composition. The words by Nazar Qabbani, of course. He was describing Baghdad when the sun goes down and he's just standing by the river. So he described Baghdad with all this devotion and with all this love, as if he was talking to his love. Mind you, this was in the 70s. We never realized, the case is going to be that bad now. But it's a song for all times.
Yes, so it became a love song to a ruined city now. So beautiful.
مدي بساطي واملي اكوابي وانسي العتاب فقد نسيت عتابي عيناك يا بغداد منذ طفولتي شمسان ناعمتان في اهدابي مدي بساطي واملي اكوابي وانسي العتاب فقد نسيت عتابي مدي بساطي واملي اكوابي وانسي العتاب فقد نسيت عتابي عيناك يا بغداد منذ طفولتي شمسان نعيمتان في أهدابي عيناك يا بغداد منذ طفولتي شمسان نعيمتان في أهدابي.
In 2010, as part of the Radio 3 Focus on China, as Beijing hosted the Olympics, World Roots did a long trek down to Yunnan province in the southwest of the country to record little-known music by some of China's ethnic minorities. We heard Ilham weep before he sang. These ladies weep while they sing. That was a group of women in southwest China who've just heard the news that World Roots is coming to an end. Actually, no, that's a wedding song sung for us in a rock quarry high up above Yunnan's beautiful cascading rice paddies. A year later, World Roots went to Sri Lanka with Harry Sivanesan, the second of our World Roots Academy protégés. His family came originally from Jaffna, the war-torn Tamil part of the island, for which permission to visit was extremely difficult to obtain. Listening to the weeping women of Yunnan reminded me of an extraordinary experience Harry and I had, meeting a group of Tamil women who'd driven all day long out of the refugee camps past minefields to tell and sing us their harrowing stories of war in Sri Lanka.
Husband. She's lost her husband and her children, and because of that, as soon as she starts singing, the worry and the sorrow is great.
You lost them in the war?
Yes, she lost all of them in the war now.
And so all of you women who are here now, you've all lost family in the war?
Everyone here has lost at least one or two people in their family.
When you sing lament songs, does that help you in some way? Does that help you come to terms with your grief? Or does it make it worse?
So generally when singing Oppari or these songs of lament, it doesn't really help to cope with the sorrow. It just increases the sorrow. One of these ladies has lost a grandson who studied here in Jaffna at the university, and he was only 3 months away from passing out and finishing his degree. So she says, for sure, when she's going to sing, just all the memories of him, it doesn't go away, it just gets worse.
Well, having talked about these funeral songs, these women just began singing. Mm-hmm. And I must say it's very, very hard to listen to. It's really
difficult.
Very difficult, because they are clearly grieving. This is not something that they're just doing to demonstrate a style of singing. They are genuinely grieving, and it's a very...
I think it's much more sensitive because we're in this country at this time, and that's why we can feel it. I mean, the energy around them is
well. They
is
all
really
have
intense.
Personal stories of loss, and it's a terrible reminder that so many thousands of people died in this long civil war. That's been the blight of Sri Lanka for the past 25 years.
It's maybe an apt reminder.
A moving moment in Sri Lanka, recorded for the World Roots Academy in 2011. The following year, the Academy took us to Colombia, another country that's been torn apart by civil disruption and another country plagued by the devastation of landmines. But it was a joyful celebration of vallenato music that took us there with Academy protégé José Hernando Arias. Here he is, playing his accordion, shortly before I met someone quite important.
Un saludo muy cariñoso a todos los vallenatos aquí desde Valledupar. Saludamos al señor gobernador.
This is quite something. I'm at the opening ceremony of the 45th Vallenato Festival in Valledupar in northeast Colombia. And the man you can hear addressing this crowd of many thousands is Juan Manuel Santos. He's the president of Colombia. The fact that he's opening this festival gives you some idea of the importance of Vallenato here in Colombia. Anyway, in 12 years of presenting World Roots on Radio 3, I've never interviewed a president, and I think it's about time that changed. President Santos, it's very good of you to give us a moment of your time. Here you are at the Festival of Vallenato in Valledupar, and I can safely say that it would be very unlikely
that anyone like you, a head of state in the UK, would be opening a festival of folk music. So what is it about Vallenato that brings you here?
First of all, I've been coming to the festivals of Vallenato for many, many years. It's something that has grown in me, and not only in me, in 46 million Colombians. The Vallenato is a very special music, combines rhythm with poetry. But it's a special kind of poetry because it's a way to tell stories, stories about the region, stories about the families, always linked to something romantic. And it has become a symbol of our cultural diversity. When you talk to a Vallenato or a Vallenata, they are very proud, not only about their music, but about their region and about what this means to them. So this is something that if you promote the cultural values of a society, you are strengthening the society. That's why I make a big effort to come to this festival as president.
The BBC would not have been able to be here 3 or 4 years ago. We're very lucky that things have changed. What have you done to make things safer to be here in this part of Colombia?
Well, it has been an effort of many people. I would say it's a combination of many things. First of all, security. Without security, it's very difficult to have development. But at the same time, we have put in place policies to strengthen our democracy, to give people hope in the future. I say optimism is a very important ingredient in any society. When you think that your children can have a better future than you have had, then you will work better, you will work more. And I try to feed the optimism of Colombian people every single day.
And so Vallenato, what does it represent in that, what you're doing?
The Vallenato adds happiness to the people. When you hear a good Vallenato, your soul and your heart together, they are much more inspired.
President Santos, thank you very much. And we really look forward to the festival.
I guarantee you that you will enjoy it very much. I wish I had that talent that the Vallenatos have to improvise and sing at the same time and enjoy themselves.
A president who sings Vallenato, who does his speeches through Vallenato, that would be interesting.
I love to dance Vallenato. I know the Vallenatos, but I'm a very bad singer.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Los grandes recuerdos de este festival siempre perduran en mi corazón, porque es muy difícil poder olvidar esos momentos de tanta emoción. Los grandes recuerdos de este festival siempre perduran en mi corazón, porque es muy difícil poder olvidar esos momentos de tanta emoción. Reciban con todo el cariño, público querido, este gran saludo musical, ya que hay recuerdos tan gratos que yo no olvido de la leyenda del festival.
El festival Vallenato me dejó muchos recuerdos, hasta los niños me alzaron en hombros por todo el pueblo, hasta los niños me alzaron en hombros por todo el pueblo.
Paolo, I really do not believe what I'm looking at. This is incredible. These are three cowboys from the Sertao, dressed like authentic local cowboys, just covered in this beautiful, thick leather. And, it looks medieval, this costume. Paolo, the faces of these guys, of these riders, one of them is really quite badly cut. And the horse he's riding is also quite badly cut. I mean, they've treated the wound, but I guess that comes from riding through this very rugged countryside.
Yeah, that's when they go in the catinga, running after the cows. Somehow they protect the horse however they can and themselves, but there's no way they don't get hurt. So also the faces tell a lot about their lives, the way they look, You know, they look at least 10, 15 years older than they really are because of the sun, the dry all year long. These are the real guys. By their faces, you can tell they've had cachaça all night long because they came from a party.
Isn't it strange that on this narrow road, and our car is stopped here, and there are these three cowboys, and but cars are just, any car that goes by does not slow down. It just whoosh, whizzes by. Why is that?
Well, even though it's evening daylight, they are afraid because of a safety matter, you know.
They're, what, they think it's bandits or something?
Could
who,
be.
Who are the bandits, us or the cowboys?
None of us, none of us. They are not here, thank God.
When we stopped our car and came out and started taking pictures of the cowboys, they've got these two cow horns and they started playing them. And now one of them is singing. What's he singing?
I told them a little bit who you were and what were you doing here. So the moment I said you guys were from a radio, from England, but I'm sure they have no idea where England is because these guys don't go to school. They start very young to work, you know, helping fathers and grandfathers. But they knew, you know, we were speaking a different language and they started improvising like, you, I know you're not from here. I know you don't speak my language, but, you know, we're happy you're here. We're happy you came to know our land. So really beautiful, really beautiful. It really touched me because it's, you know, even though he doesn't have the literature or the school, he has, you know, his mind and all this inspiring atmosphere every day.
You're going to have to look at the website to see this because this is just the most incredible sight, these three cowboys of the Sertao. Just the sound of the leather creaking, and because even the horse is protected by leather.
Oh yeah, they protect the horse however they can, you know, so that the bushes don't.
Silver studs on the leather, and it's very kind of light but rich, chocolatey brown. Gorgeous.
Amazing.
Santa Luzia, eu sou filho de João Vianês e moro lá perto do Bredo. Vem meu compadre Buru, que mora na Santa Luzia, é primo do vaqueiro também. Ô, oh, vaqueirão, você não pensa que é vaqueiro, mas sempre nós saímos bem.
Cowboys in Brazil, presidents in Colombia. World Roots on the Road, which of course is the name of a CD featuring 30 tracks recorded all over the world in the first 10 years of the programme. We'll be hearing one of the groups on that CD in just a moment. As well as hearing the many poignant ways in which music reflects personal stories, we've also tried to find out and record how music of oral tradition is actually structured. This proved quite a challenging task, especially with some of the more complex polyphonic traditions that we encountered. Here are two examples. One in Uganda. In a minute, you'll hear me talking to Andy Cook, who brought us to a village deep in the countryside of southern Uganda to record for the very first time a giant xylophone resonated over a pit in the earth, played in an interlocking technique by a group of men on either side of the xylophone keys. But first, in Guria, a province of the country of Georgia, four men demonstrate how they put together their yodeling polyphonic songs.
Truda gavuta nelia amin.
Well, that exquisite song was called Shalva Chemo, which is in fact the name of this group, of this trio. And that was three men singing and also playing the chonguri, which sounds so much like a medieval lute. Here in Guria, this is the very special music of Guria province of southwest Georgia. But I'd like to ask you to do one more polyphonic song without the chonguri, but with the yodeling. You know, this is such complex music. I wonder if, is it possible for you to demonstrate for me one by one how you actually put a piece together? For instance, if I asked you to do a piece that you were rehearsing earlier on called Hasan Begura, could you demonstrate that for me, how that song is put together?
So that's the beginning. That's the beginning.
That's how it starts.
That's the first voice. Now we'll hear the yodeler, the Krimanjuli. So that's the yodeler. Now the bass. So you put that all together, that's what you hear. When
we've got one more singer here.
One more
what does
singer.
The fourth singer do?
He gave a different variation of it. What he just sang was a different variation of what they sang before. There are as many variations as there are singers and villages. But ours is the best.
Would it be possible for you to sing this song?
Of course, pleasure.
Andy, when they're all playing together, it's so kind of dense and complex. Mm. It would really help me to understand how this music is put together. If you could ask them to maybe come in one by one, each of the xylophone players, and explain what's happening.
Sure. So we'll start with Waiswa, who's holding two beaters. He's sitting at the top of the instrument, and he's outlining the melody. So I'll invite Weisswer to begin. Okay, after that, another player sitting opposite him will mix notes in between his. And then sitting at the top of the instrument is the leader of the group called Coppola. Again, he's got two beaters and he elaborates the melody. He's got five notes that he plays. Sometimes he'll do riding rhythms on just one note as he's doing right now. So that's Coppola. Then there are three musicians at the bottom end of the xylophone, so we'll invite the first of those to play. He's holding one beater and using his hand to dampen the keys. And he's playing like a bass rhythm at the moment, but other times he'll be playing drum rhythms. So then we'll hear the next drummer, who again is holding one beater and using his hand again to dampen. Actually, the bottom two keys that he's playing are covered in rubber just to modify the sound, take away some of the harmonics. They're kind of interlocking parts together. Then sitting right at the bottom is another player playing just one key. So sometimes he uses two sticks, sometimes one. At the moment, he's using two sticks. And he's playing the role of somebody who would be normally playing a tall drum covered in a lizard skin, but they've roofed the drum and are using a xylophone key. So now let's hear all of the parts together.
That makes it much clearer. The amazing music of Nachibembe Village in Uganda with the magnificent Pitt xylophone. As I said, that track features on the World Roots on the Road CD. One track we were desperate to include on that collection but weren't able to is this. The panpipes of the Youth Association from Puna in the High Andes, recorded in their youth club in Lima, Peru in 2006.
Thank you.
On tonight's World Roots, the last of 13 years of its being on air, we've tried to reflect some of the extraordinary diversity of the music we've been privileged to record on location around the world. But it's not just the beautiful music that we've heard that I will particularly remember World Roots for. It's also those touching, personal, human stories that being in such places has given us access to. Music is like an arrow that goes straight to the heart of people's feelings and cultural values. I'd like to end with something from a trip that we did down in the southwest of Madagascar with our guides, musicians Paddy Bush and Justin Vallée. We went to find out what had happened to Paddy's teacher, a local musician called Robert Rindy. As it happened, both Paddy and I were first introduced to Malagasy music through an obscure recording of Robert Rindy dating from the 1980s. You could say that it was that recording that ultimately took us both to this remote corner of the island of Madagascar. I hope some of World Roots' journeys over the years will have opened up new musical worlds for you all. Here we are at Robert Rindy's grave, and it's a simple whitewashed cement grave standing about 3 feet off the ground with the headstone. I think they're going to sacrifice the goat now. The knives, there are two knives being sharpened against each other. I don't think I'm going to watch it either, thank you very much. Yep. It's not a pretty sight, I have to say. But evidently it makes the ancestors happy. So. Now that the goat has been slaughtered, are they interpreting something?
Yes, he's explained what has happened. He's saying that his father, being a Christian, has asked that this ritual be simplified. So when the goat is killed, that they just want the blood to go to run towards the tomb, and that would be enough as a ritual, as a sort of asking for permission to be here among the tomb. But if they were not Christians, what they would have done is taking all the goat, cutting pieces and putting in all the on all the tombs of the people who've died who are elder. Whereas now they have just done that and they're just going to share it. What happens is the inside of the goat, all the heart and all around that, is going to go to the Hazumanga, who is the master of the ceremony, who's unfortunately too old to be here, but as a mark of respect that will be given to him. And the head of the goat will go to his assistant, and then the rest divided by the rest of family.
How would they feel if Paddy played a tune on his maravan, the maravan that was modelled on his teacher's maravan?
I have explained to Robert Rindy's son that Paddy has been here and played Maruvani with his father, and he was hoping that he will meet him again, but unfortunately he's passed away, so now he's going to play for him. So his son is very happy.
Paddy's taken his Maruvan, a very beautiful looking Maruvan, very fine workmanship that Paddy's done on it, and he's taken it out of the case. It's the Maruvan that was based precisely on the proportions of the maravan played by Robert Rindy, whose tomb we're in front of. And he's put down one of these scarves, it's called a lambawani, on the sandy floor, right in front of the tomb of Robert Rindy, who died on the 30th of March 2007 and was born around 1935 and was Paddy's teacher.
researcher Robert.
That final edition of World Roots was presented by Lucy Duran and produced by James Parkin, Roger Short and Peter Meanwell.
If you think film music's all about the glitz and glamour of Hollywood, think again. Ever since the dawn of the sound film, some of the greatest film scores have been created on this side of the Atlantic. Join me in Composer of the Week on Radio 3 for a journey through more than eight decades of uniquely British film music, from Vaughan Williams to Nitin Sawhney, via William Walton, The Beatles, Michael Nyman, Benjamin Britten, Malcolm Arnold, and, of course, John Barry. Join me for Composer of the Week as part of the Sound of Cinema season, weekdays at 12 noon and 6:30 on BBC Radio 3.
And this is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting between 90 and 93 FM on digital radio and in high-definition sound online. The time now is 11 o'clock. It's time for Jazz Lineup tonight with Julian Joseph.
Hello. On today's programme, as part of BBC Radio 3's Sound of Cinema season, Kevin Legendre joins me for analysis of one of jazz music's most celebrated film soundtracks for this month's Now's the Time feature. Kevin, what album have you chosen and what makes this recording so special?
Well, it's Herbie Hancock's finest moment, I think, as a soundtrack composer. It has an amazing lineup. It's a great historical piece and it has really, really beautiful music like this.
Thanks, Kevin, and plenty more sound and discussion on that later. Also on the programme, I'll be bringing you part two of a special duo concert set by pianists Alex Wilson and Cesar Correa, recorded at this year's Two Pianos Steinway Festival. More from that high-energy Latin piano feast later on the show. Well, let's get things started with something brand new from US sax master Kenny Garrett. This is a side order of Hijiki. Thank you. A side order of Hijiki from alto playing original Kenny Garrett. The new album is called Pushing the World Away and features the breathtaking rhythm section comprised of Benito Gonzalez on piano, Cochran Holt on bass and Marcus Baylor on the drums. On several of the tracks, he expands the lineup and uses pianist Vernell Brown Jr. and McClenty Hunter on drums. Yet again, Garrett delivers a fine set of original music that journeys through Latin and Caribbean rhythms, as well as the high-energy example we just heard. Garrett, in the notes, remembers his close friend, pianist, and modern jazz giant, Mulgrew Miller, to whom he dedicates the album. From the highest quality American output to music of quality from this side of the pond, in the form of Empirical. This young British band are Nathaniel Facey on alto, Lewis Wright on vibes, Tom Farmer on the bass and Shaney Forbes on the drums. On this, their fourth album, they are joined by a string quartet, and this is The Simple Light Shines Brightest.